The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Glad you are with us this afternoon. And we have put together a jam-packed show for you. So, no time to waste. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
What is it going to take for our public officials to care that homeless people are dropping rocks and bricks and concrete onto innocent drivers? I mean, this is one of the craziest things in, you know, a lifetime of chronicling craziness, that they won't simply sweep these encampments that they know are producing the rock throwers. And so it goes on and on until somebody's going to get killed. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. But why I'm spotlighting this again, because it seems like old news in a way, but Jenny Durkin does not care. And she's made that ably and amply clear in an interview that she has done. So let's go through this again. Another person was five more cars yesterday on I-90 and I-5, right? That interchange right where all those homeless encampments are. So Jenny Durkin, she talked to Brandi Cruz at Q13 Fox, and she says, not my deal. I don't have anything to do with this.
You know, the more people you have in and around a highway, the more dangerous it is for a number of reasons. It's why we've been working with and pushing the State Department of Transportation to really take responsibility for our freeways and the people experiencing homelessness there in the encampments. And we're hoping that we'll see more progress on that front, that the State Department of Transportation is able to do what we do on our...
So she's putting all this on DOT. It is Seattle policies that have littered our city with drug addicts, sadly. And it's Seattle and King County policy. But she says, no, state DOT, they should clear the encampments. It's their responsibility. We don't have anything to do with it. It's their land. And on she goes.
Our lands, which is do outreach, get people in safer places, remove the dangerous encampments. So we'll continue to work with them and push them on that front.
So are there any encampments along those areas that are the jurisdiction of the city?
Almost all of the encampments that are right in those around the freeways are on State Department of Transportation lands. We tend on the buffer zones and sometimes even on State Department of Transportation lands work to mitigate safety concerns. But really, the majority of those are in state jurisdictions. And it's a complicated process sometimes because if you've seen it, sometimes you have to cross a highway to get to the right of way that is where there's people camping.
So Jenny Durkin says it's just not her responsibility. It's all on state DOT. And she said, oh, that's all DOT land down there.
If someone dies in one of these incidents, do you think that will hasten the government's response to address the issue?
I really hope we don't have to get there. I know the State Patrol is taking it seriously already, as is Seattle Police Department. So we're trying to avoid that kind of tragedy. And are already working on it.
She hopes that we don't get to that. Well, it's inevitably going to happen, Mayor. Somebody is going to die. And you seem awfully nonchalant, but you know, you think about it. This is Jenny Durkin. When Chaz Chop starts, where people were being murdered and raped, but at the beginning of it, she didn't care. She said, oh, maybe this is going to be the summer of love. She just didn't care that a part of our city had been taken over by domestic terrorists, that a police precinct was taken over. She did nothing about it. And she had the same nonchalance about that that she has about people pelting cars with rocks down on I-5 and I-90. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I hope and pray that no innocent person is killed. And I wonder if they will care then. Will it take somebody that they love being injured or killed before they start caring? But this is, it's just absolutely unbelievable to watch this happening again and again. The latest victim's a guy named Dan Wiegand. He told Channel 4, ComoNews.com, that he will never forget the sound of what happened.
The memory of that thing hitting that windshield will probably never leave my mind.
A brick was dropped on his windshield, and he said that, of course, he easily could have been killed.
That if the rock had landed just a little lower, it would have gone straight through the windshield, possibly killed me, and I'm very fortunate for that.
And, of course, it just comes out of nowhere.
Looking more down at the road, I didn't see the projectile coming at me. And as soon as that thing hit the windshield, all I saw was a huge rock in front of my face.
And here's his plea.
I'd ask him to clean up the camps. I'd ask him to clean up the areas around the highways so that we can feel safe as a community just driving down our own freeways.
Yeah, and this one wasn't dropped. It was a guy that was just standing by the side of the road and throws it over. Somebody caught that on their camera, on their vehicle. So they're all coming from the encampments. And, you know, they say, well, you can't clear an encampment because just a few people are having their cars hit or throwing rocks. Only a few, so you can't punish everybody. Everybody in these camps is doing something illegally. Whether it's drug use, whether it's the pimping that is happening on a all too regular basis, sometimes with underage girls, so people can buy their drugs. And camping on public land is illegal. So do something about it before somebody's killed. It is unbelievable. But Jenny Durkin, man, she doesn't care about anything, does she? Yeah, she's worth several hundred million dollars. And I guess that kind of wealth just buys you nonchalance. Nonchalance? Yeah, there we go. Nonchalance. Why can't I say that word? So I hope somebody doesn't die before they are finally moved to action. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, it's a tax dollars thing, but it's also an I told you so. It is a big I told you so, and I've been telling you about it for 26 years now. 1995 is when Sound Transit started to be pitched to the voters for a 1996 vote. And I told you right at the beginning, before Sound Transit ever got a vote, I said, this is a ridiculous waste of money. It's a train from the 1880s. It's a train. Rapid Bus Express is far more efficient, something that I've always supported. And we didn't know that Microsoft was going to, you know, 40 years ago, we didn't know Microsoft was going to be in Redmond and what that would do to traffic and commuting issues. We didn't know about a lot of job centers. We didn't know how our housing was going to evolve. Nobody knew back then about the Sammamish Plateau and the Issaquah Plateau and places to the north and south that have become much denser. And a fixed rail line can't accommodate any of that stuff. So the Seattle Times says a piece about now for Sound Transit 3, which is $51 billion, for Sound Transit 3, they are already facing an $8 billion shortfall and years behind schedule. I want you to understand, this is something that's costing every man, woman, and child in the taxing district $50,000. They said, well, we get some tax money from the feds. Okay, so people in Chattanooga, which makes sense because they have to pay for our choo-choo in Chattanooga. So it is looking disastrous. I'm going to talk to a guy from the Cato Institute coming up at 12:30 this afternoon because transit is dying all around the country. Car traffic is back to 95% of what it was in 2019, pre-pandemic. Car traffic is back to 95%. Transit ridership is 40%. Of what it was in 2019. And it's even worse here in the Seattle area. That's nationwide. People just are not using transit. They don't want to. They don't want to get on a bus or a train during a pandemic. They also recognize the violence that has been attracted, the number of homeless people who are just riding around in circles as the bus route makes its way around the region. People just don't want to use transit anymore. And This guy's really interested in talking to this Cato guy because he has all those stats. And then also, we're going to have self-driving electric vehicles probably in my lifetime. I've talked to enough automobile futurists who have great track records. And we could have the left lane of the freeway. We could have cars inches apart because they're all controlled by remote sensors. You have cars going inches apart, going 100 miles an hour. And the lane next to it would be a merge lane. And then the right lanes would be the on-ramp, off-ramp lanes. It can happen. It will happen. And if we had some sense of a future instead of what we're doing, spending, I think it's $80 billion in total for Sound Transit. They are 15 years behind schedule with phase one. They're tens of billions of dollars over budget. Think about, they could put a fence on every overpass to stop rock throwing if we weren't spending this money. I mean, it's outrageous. So 12:30 this afternoon, I will talk to the guy from Cato about that. Up next in the big lead. Next. There we go. What do you think, Andrew? Should I just go forward?
The big lead, big local.
We always have to make that. So we told you on the show yesterday that King County Sheriff's Office has opened a review of the Richard Sherman 911 call because the dispatcher was, in the minds of a lot of people, kind of rude. And I thought the Redmond police chief took a bit of a cheap shot yesterday. I hear he's a really good man, but they sent out a press release that I didn't get to read until after the show. But I'm going to paraphrase, but it essentially said, you know, all these complaints are coming into us about the call receiver. And he said, that was King County Sheriff who's handling it. The Redmond 911, the male 911 call receivers that we have, were heard being very polite on the same incident. Meaning, ours are great and the King County call receiver was lousy. I mean, that was the implication. So I thought I would do a little compare and contrast because we did obtain the Redmond 911 call, which actually paints a more complete picture as well. But it's going to do a compare and contrast. Nicole, did you bump up the original or do we only have the Redmond here?
Oh, sorry. Nope, I'll bump it up for you right now.
Okay, because I want to play the original first because I agree. She sounded rude to me, but we had former King County Sheriff John Urquhart on a couple of days ago, and he said, "No, they have to be firm to get the information. If the person on the other end of the line is frantic, the person receiving the call has to be really firm and has to take charge." And so, okay, maybe I'll just play the. Oh, here we go. So here's the original one from this is the King County Sheriff's call receiver with Richard Sherman's wife.
911, what are you reporting?
I need officers to my house now. My husband is drunk and threatening to kill himself.
Stop. What's the address? Are there any weapons? Stop.
There's no gun. I'm saying there are no weapons, ma'am. There are no weapons.
You need to stop interrupting me so I can get the information I need to get officers expedited.
I need officers here now.
Okay, so they thought she was rude. So now the King County Sheriff's Office says we are opening an administrative review over the conduct of our call receiver. So then Redmond, they said, well, we handled it much more professionally. And the guy was more calm. I'll give him that.
911, what are you reporting?
No, that's the wrong one. Here we go.
He needs to be in handcuffs.
Yeah, still follow him. Yeah, they're trying to do that as safely as they can. So appreciate you letting me know that fire.
But the front door is open now, and he's walking towards the house. He's coming. He needs to be in handcuffs.
Do you have everything locked? Why is your door open? I'm not sure why.
My dad's talking to the police officer. No, they don't have me have him. He's not in handcuffs.
No, okay. Yeah.
The door needs to be closed. My kids are here. I'm leaving as soon as this is over.
Okay, now, there are some tremendous differences. Her dad was a state patrol trooper, and I've heard from many people he was a fantastic peace officer. And the police are already on the site. So the part that has been released, of course the call receiver is much more calm because he doesn't have to get information. They already have the address. They already know there are no weapons. They have all the vital information that the first one did not. So why the King County Sheriff's Office? But here's, and this is Mitzi Jo Hanknik, man, just total chaos at the top. Great, great people. Deputies and detectives with King County Sheriff's Office, the men and women who serve there, all the ones that I've known have been fantastic. But Mitzi Jo Hanknik, I've told you, is over her head. She is, and people that I trust tell me that she's just incompetent at her job. And so now at the very top, they make this decision because of complaints from people who have no idea what that job is, what it entails, how they're trained. Urquhart said she did fine. But because of complaints, they're responding to that. I mean, they could have their own set of standards and say, yeah, by our professional judgment, she abided by them or she violated them. But they're reacting to complaints from the public. That's no way to run a police department. A sheriff's agency? But that's what you get when you have somebody like Mitzi Jo Hanknik at the top. And by the way, I have to say one other thing that's really funny. You know, there were a bunch of people who complained because we were the first to get the 911 call from Maple Valley. They were very upset. Oh, shameless. I can't believe you've stooped to a new low. And, yeah, they're just ridiculous complaints. I saw on Twitter, which is just a toilet. But I saw that one of the people who complained, he writes for the most overpriced media entity called The Athletic. And I mean, they just charge people a ridiculous amount for stuff you can get for free elsewhere. But this guy writes for The Athletic. He said, oh, yes, Monson has stooped to a new low. And then I just decided to see how The Athletic handled it. They quoted from all of the 911 calls that we got because that's their only option because they're the printed word. They quoted. They wrote down what we played. And he says, we're shameless, but his employer, The Athletic, again, ridiculously overpriced, he was fine with his employer transcribing the 911 calls, apparently, which just shows you how just enormously stupid so many people's thoughts and actions are. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
I knew I was kind of fired up for today's show. It's going to be a good show. Okay, coming up next, you're going to get some information that you will not get anywhere else. The Cato Institute writes about how outstandingly expensive Sound Transit is. Details next here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, as I've been telling you from the very beginning, Sound Transit 1995 was a glimmer in voters' eyes. And I told you it was going to be the most wasteful thing we've ever done in the region. It also turns out to be the most criminally corrupt public agency in our nation's history. And we always said it's going to be obsolete long before it's ever built. And to help back up that perspective, Randall O'Toole, he writes for the Cato Institute. He has a new piece up at cato.org. Transit's Dead End. Randall O'Toole joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Randall, it's great to talk with you this afternoon.
It's great to be here.
All right, so let's start with just some of the stats that you give in your piece about how car ridership versus transit ridership has bounced back since COVID.
Well, you know, Americans in 2019 drove for about 85% of all of our travel, and transit carried less than 1% of passenger travel. Highways also move about 40% of freight, and transit carries virtually 0% of freight. So it's strange to see this emphasis on transit. We should throw more money at transit than we do at highways, even though it moves so few people. That was 2019. In 2020, transit just died. Transit ridership in some places fell to 5% of what it had been due to the pandemic. And since then, it's recovered a little, but we're driving about 95% as much as we drove in 2019 before the pandemic, and yet transit ridership is only about 40% as much.
Wow.
In some places, it's a lot less. And it's coming back even slower than Amtrak. Amtrak was doing worse than transit initially, but now it's doing a little better than transit, not a lot. Flying is about 80% of where it was, and Amtrak is about 45% of where it was before the pandemic. So we've got these four modes of travel, and the yep. modes that aren't getting the giant subsidies like highways and airlines are the ones that are coming back. They're the ones that people use because they're faster, they're safer, they're cheaper, they're more convenient. Transit and Amtrak is slow and expensive and not doing very well.
Well, my biggest gripe with light rail when it was proposed, I guess 26 years ago now, my biggest gripe was 40 years ago, we had no idea that Microsoft was going to be in Redmond, or a suburb of Seattle here. We had no idea. We didn't know where all these other companies were going to put their home base. We didn't know where housing would evolve in our region. And when you have a fixed rail line, it cannot adapt to changing demographics, changing work centers, changing residential centers. And that's the first reason I thought this was insane. Are you familiar with how much money we're spending on Sound Transit here?
Oh, yes. I find it quite amazing that Seattle voters have agreed to spend more than $70 billion on what is really a 19th century technology. What we call light rail is really just a slight a variation on streetcars, which were perfected in 1888 by an electrician named Frank Sprague, and they were replaced. They were made obsolete by a new technology in 1927. This new technology is called buses, and the buses in 1927 could move more people per hour at a lower cost than streetcars or light rail. And the idea that light rail is some kind of way of moving large numbers of people is just absurd. Light rail, the light in light rail stands for light capacity. It doesn't stand for light weight.
Right.
Light rail cars actually weigh more than heavy rail cars, but they're low capacity transit. And buses can move far more people than light rail, and they can do it for a lot less money. So between 1927, when the first efficient buses were developed, and 1974, almost every American city got rid of their streetcars and light rail and replaced them with buses.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then the federal government said, hey, we'll help pay to build new light rail lines. And so suddenly transit agencies started building light rail to get free federal money.
Right.
And they discovered that if you built a more expensive light rail line, you got more free federal dollars. And so Seattle has essentially competed with Portland and other cities to build the most expensive light rail lines they can so they can get more federal dollars.
Absolutely. And just as trolleys were replaced by buses, and now we have the light rail. I mean, I've talked to futurists in the auto industry who have convinced me that we're going to have, maybe in my lifetime, self-driving electric vehicles that will be able to, you know, drive 100 miles an hour if we want, inches apart in one lane of the freeway. The next lane would be a merge lane in there. I think that there is a technology that is right on our doorstep that is going to make light rail even more obsolete. And yet, Randall, we are spending here in our region $50,000 for every man, woman, and child in the Sound Transit taxing district, $50,000 per person to build this monstrosity here.
It's an incredible monstrosity, especially when you consider that when you calculate the cost, it's something like $5 million. $500,000 per inch.
Yes.
Of light rail cost. I mean, it's $340 million a mile. So you figure out how much that is per inch. What is that? Maybe it's $50,000 an inch. I got to get my.
Oh, I'm good at math, but I can't
but
do that one in my head.
Huge amount of money per inch of light rail, and $340 million a mile is the average cost of Sound Transit's light rail. You can build, 17 miles of four-lane freeways for that amount of money. If you want to relieve congestion, light rail is absolutely not the way to do it. But Seattle wants to make congestion as bad as it can to try to force people out of their cars and onto low-capacity transit systems.
That's exactly right. And the reason is because there are a lot of labor unions who have bought politicians. There are an awful lot of politicians who just despise single-occupant vehicles, and they think that this is some social project that they are enacting in the region. And the whole thing, it's very frustrating. So when you say in your piece, end of the line for light rail, or for transit's dead end, is how you phrased it in the headline. What does that mean? I mean, do you think that we're going to just continue to see diminishing returns here?
Well, the pandemic didn't change how people behave. What it did is accelerated trends that were already in place. Transit ridership has been dropping every year since 2014. And over the long run, per capita transit ridership has been dropping since 1920. In 1920, the average urban American rode transit almost 300 times a year. In 2019, it was just 37 trips a year per urban American. And in 2020, of course, it was probably about 10 or
right,
even less. So what the pandemic has done is accelerated all the trends that made transit obsolete. More people are working at home. Offices are moving to the suburbs. Amazon has given up on the idea that they should have 50,000 jobs in downtown Seattle, and they're moving jobs to the suburbs because they don't like the Seattle political environment. The people are moving their homes into places that are more distant suburbs or exurbs because they don't need to go to work every day. And
right,
all of these things work against transit. So transit moved all of 1% of passenger travel in 2019. It's never going to be that much again. It's going to be less and less in the future. So the idea that we should continue spending billions of dollars on a system that was already obsolete and is even more obsolete today is just ridiculous.
Well, in their latest phase three of Sound Transit, that is a $51 billion boondoggle. We just were told last week that they're looking to be $7 billion over budget on that and years behind schedule. And by the way, before I let you go, Randall, I just did the math for us. Sound Transit is costing $5,366 per inch.
Okay. Got to get those decimal points right. I'm glad you did that.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Randall, it's great talk with you. Randall Toole, his piece on transit's dead end is up at cato.org. And Randall, it's great talk with you. Appreciate all the info.
Thank you.
And as always, you're the taxpayers. I want to know what you think. You can text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. I went through a lot of news today, and there was one story in particular that just absolutely broke my heart. And I think I'm probably like you. The things we react to the strongest are the ones that we relate to the most. And being the husband of a wife who walks and runs every day, my wife puts in probably 30 to 40 miles a week. All three of my daughters are walkers and runners extensively. And so when I hear what happened to this family down in Maple Valley, it's just devastating. Greg Moore, he was out for a 15-mile Sunday morning run. And he left early, left at 4 a.m. And this guy, he was very health conscious. He's 53 years old, avid runner. And his wife told, his wife's name is Michelle. And she told Q13 News, Q13 Fox, about the relationship.
Greg and I met when I was 18 and he was 19. We were about to celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary in September and 34 years together in October. And we have three children and our first grandchild on the way. And he won't ever get to meet her.
Just heartbreaking. And he was out for a run. Somebody hit and run, knocked him into a ditch. And she also talked about how running just brought out the best in her husband.
He loved it. He did it three times a week, and he was fast. And it was so great as his wife, who's known him all this time, to see him morph into this different person, the better version of himself.
So he was doing the healthiest thing you can do, just out exercising, and then somebody hit him. She left for work at 7:30, and she was surprised that he wasn't home for his run by then.
When I left for work at 7:30, he still wasn't home yet, and that was unusual.
And then she tried texting him. Those didn't go or they went unresponded, of course. And so then she and family members went looking on the route he runs.
And then we got down to the intersection, and it was blocked off by a police car. And we asked them what was going on, and they said they were investigating a vehicular homicide of a pedestrian, and we knew.
And she said that they had quite a future planned.
We were looking forward to our future together. We had plans. We had trips.
And so now somebody's out there. And the reason I wanted to talk about this story is somebody knows who did this. I mean, if you know somebody who drives in Maple Valley area, here's my guess. They say that it was a car that hit him sometime between 4 and 6 a.m. on Sunday. So it was likely somebody under the influence, driving drunk in the middle of the night after a long Saturday night. They probably know, because this looked like a busy high speed limit roadway that he was running on. Didn't have sidewalks, but cars were going by. It looked like 40 to 50 miles an hour during the news report. And there's going to be some front passenger side damage to a vehicle. And I would like all of you to keep your eyes out. If you see a car with right front end damage, let the police know. Get the word out. Spread the word. And man, I was thinking about this because I'm always fearful until my wife or when my daughters were at home, until they would get home from a run. We don't have sidewalks in our neighborhood, but, you know, they have the reflector vest and they do everything. They do everything right. And I just don't know what that would be like because, you know, with a lot of illnesses, you can gradually ramp up to the horrible ending. But for it to happen just in an instant, I can't comprehend how, and I know a lot of people have to go through that, and I'm sure many of you have gone through that. I can't comprehend right now how the human condition can handle that. And that's why the wife, Michelle, wanted people to know about the story, to keep an eye out. They want this driver caught.
I just want to have a conversation with that person. I know that's got to be eating someone. I hope that it's eating someone up inside and that they're, I understand self-preservation and they don't want to face the consequences, but they owe that. They owe that to me and my children.
God bless this woman, their three kids, the grandchild that's on the way. Greg Moore is 53 years old. Look for a vehicle that drives around Maple Valley with right front end damage, okay? Because there's a killer out there right now. All right, Fast 15 is coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show.